And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your what looks like a beautiful day here in Middle Tennessee. Yeah, another wonderful day, 60 degrees maybe, the high, sunshine, feels like fall, which is what it is. We've got another loaded show for you. We're excited about it. We're going to cover a lot of ground, including talking a little bit about the college basketball scene coming up in the first segment or second segment of the show. In about 15 minutes, we'll talk to Dana O'Neill from The Athletic, and there's a lot of news on that front, so we'll get into all that at around 10:15. Bernard Pollard, former Titans and Ravens safety, will join us to start the second hour. Our weekly chat with Tim Hasselbeck at high noon, and we'll learn a little bit about the opponent of the Vols on Saturday down in the Plains, as we'll talk about the Auburn Tigers to start the fourth and final hour of the program. Darren McFarland down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville, and Chase McCabe is on the west side in Bellevue, while Elijah Campbell is back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Guys, I have finally done it.
Oh,
I did it?
Oh. What do we got?
It's done.
What's done?
The deal? The cord has been cut.
Oh.
Oh, this is big news.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've, like, cable? That cord?
No, but that's interesting okay. to say that. No,
well, you said you cut a cord.
No, I know. I thought you were saying. I thought you had
yes.
gotten.
And I was as shocked as you are with your laughter. So what did
no,
you?
No, right. That's a fair way. The when you said that, then I thought about what I said and like, yeah, okay, that makes total sense. Yeah, I guess I didn't phrase that correctly. I have released myself of someone on my fantasy roster. They have officially been cut.
See, no, I thought you were doing a Hulu or a YouTube TV or Xbox or whatever. All these. That's what I thought. Cord cutting is the term for that. I thought that's the move you made.
So you have done what John Robinson and Mike Vrabel won't do.
Look, tell me I'm not dedicated. Tell me I fly by the seat of my pants. I will tell you wrong. We're week 11 of the NFL season, and I have had him on my roster since day one. But it is time to move on. It is more than time. And yes, Chase, to your point, I did what the general manager and the head coach can't do last night, and I cut my kicker. And his name is Steven Gostkowski. And I've had him since day one. I drafted him.
You're kidding.
And I have stuck through him through thick and thin, and it's been a lot of thin. Very few thick. Well, actually,
have you actually played him?
Every single week. I don't have a backup kicker.
You have played him every week?
Well, other than when the Titans had that COVID thing going on, and I, they weren't playing, right. So I had to pick up kickers.
You've been committed, much more committed than
when you picked up a kicker, you kept him on your roster?
The entire time. So don't tell me I'm not dedicated.
You gave him a shot.
I have a quick hook.
Demented.
Don't tell me that. I have been more than patient. Clearly.
I'm not sure this is sound fantasy ownership on your part to have done this in retrospect. But, I didn't know about this. So I would, if I had known earlier, of course, we're competing against each other. So I don't know if I would have offered this. But in hindsight, Darren, I am stunned.
Why?
That you kept him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. It's called dedication. I was willing to hang in there just like the general manager and the head coach. But there comes a time when you must say goodbye and you must stop living in the past. And the past has been a while for Gostkowski when he was the best kicker in football. Those days are gone. He is no longer the best in the league. He's the worst in the league, and he's been the worst all season. But I've still stuck with him, but I made the decision. That was it. And we talked about it on the show last week, another miss, and that's it. And I had, yesterday was the first night of pickups, and I told Steven Gostkowski, thank you, but goodbye. I'm moving on. And quite honestly, I think I did what, somebody else, a real general manager should do. A real head coach should do.
No, they're just going to cut the punter.
I'm just fantasy.
Yeah, they're just going to cut the punter that, actually did a good job the 1 week he played, and they cut him.
Look, Ryan Allen must be the worst punter in the world in practice.
Yeah.
Like, he must stink in practice. And Trevor Daniel must be a Hall of Fame punter in practice.
I'd love to see what Gostkowski and Trevor Daniel do in practice. It must be awesome.
It must be fantastic.
Maybe Jarrett Garantano comes and hangs out with them, and they all have a great practice together.
Yeah. And then, yeah. Then Josh Dobbs shows up and says, guys, practice is a little bit overrated.
Exactly. Ah, coaching. Don't you love it?
How do you explain that move?
You don't. I don't. I don't have one.
Does anybody have an explanation for that move?
The only explanation that I've heard that makes some sense is they thought that the hang time was not good, even though he averaged the 50 yards, and they got the job done in that game. And obviously, he didn't have a 17-yard punt or a punt blocked, but they thought the other guy has better hang time. I guess I can see that going into the game against the Colts. I guess.
That's 17 yards.
I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm saying that something that there's some logic to that.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of hang time on that 17 yard.
Did I miss the hang time on that 17 yard punt? Because no. Was it just sky high?
I'm saying going into that game, going into the Colts game, the decision to switch to the guy, I think that's what they were basing it on. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. Now, after the game where he's had a nightmare like that, that's what I don't get. That you keep your job on that or after that game when you had the other guy that averaged 50 yards a punt and punted a lot and did a pretty good job, I thought.
Well, I'm here to tell everybody I, too, am a head coach and a general manager, and I decided to part ways with Gostkowski. And I think it's time for other
right call.
It's time for other GMs and head coaches, or at least in the case of this market, a GM and a head coach to move on. It's just time. He's earned the respect to last this long, and I'm fine with that. Because in life you do earn respect. And when you've got skins on the wall in life, whether it's football or anything else, you deserve a different size leash than everybody else. And he's gotten that, and he's earned it. But it's now time to realize that also with that, you know, your leash is only so long. And I think his leash has ran out. And now we're just living in the past because it's not the present. The present is the worst kicker in football. The past was future Hall of Fame kicker. And that seems like many years ago.
I mean, this year probably hasn't helped that by any means. But yeah, but here's the thing. There's no indication that he's not going to be kicking this weekend. It appears that he's going to be.
I think today would be a big day for that.
I mean, yeah, I guess you can have a competition or whatever and then make the decision, but I kind of felt like if there was going to be any news on that, it would have happened, you know, yesterday on the off day.
Well, I guess it goes back to maybe they're having a competition.
I don't know. I don't know what more they need to see. But again, there are a few decisions that they've made that I kind of go, okay. The punter being another one. So, I don't know. Craig Aukerman's still the special teams coach. He spoke today. Or today or tomorrow. So, and then they cut the punter that apparently didn't have enough hang time. So there you go. What do I know?
If you want me to peel back the curtain a little bit, I will. I'll let you guys know that I didn't do things. I'm not exactly proud of it. I didn't do it in a professional manner. I did not call Gostkowski into my bonus room and inform him that I was cutting him. I did kind of pull a Bobby Petrino and I left a note. I sent him an email. So.
Yeah.
Which
was
is kind of a chicken in fantasy,
pretty in chicken fantasy bleep leagues. Move, but that's what I did, you know. And I'm okay saying that out loud. I didn't do the right thing and tell him in person. I kind of just shot him an email and said, "Hey, man, I'm cut. I'm moving on. Good luck to you in your future endeavors."
Hey, Steve, what's up, Darren? Letting you go. Take care.
You made it this long, man. It was a bumpy ride, but it's time to move on.
I think the reaction of him might have been, I was still on your team?
Dude, I cut me weeks ago.
He's just honored to still be on there this long.
Yeah, do we have the ability to look up like CBS and ESPN and Yahoo, like the percentage, you know, rosters that still have Gostkowski on their roster?
I bet
there's got to be a way to know that, right?
I could look it up for ESPN.
Hang on.
Really?
I think I can look it up for CBS.
I wonder if I was the last one to cut him. If he's been cut everywhere else, but I was the last one to hang on.
He is rostered by 27% of rosters on CBS, and he has been starting, or currently he's starting in 17% of the lineups.
Okay. Well, okay. You're not the only one then.
All right.
In ESPN, he's rostered in 39% of the leagues.
Wow. And what's he starting?
It doesn't give that information.
Oh, okay. I'm going to say if you own him in ESPN, you probably have a backup. I wouldn't say he's probably been starting every week. Like me, who chose to ride him. So let him know that, hey, I don't want you to get a complex. I don't want you to be looking over your shoulder. Just go out there and do your job. I didn't even have any competition throughout the week.
Do your job.
But it was time. It was time. All right, we will come back. We'll talk to Dane O'Neill from The Athletic. A lot of news on the college basketball front. And we will do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5, The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint, smoother than smooth. Here on this Wednesday morning, let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Boy, there's been a lot of college basketball news this week, and we're going to discuss it with Dane O'Neill, who's on the line with us, senior writer for The Athletic, covering college basketball, and I guess a soon-to-be author of a book on the Big East. I am intrigued. Do tell, Dana. What can you tell us?
This time next year it will be out. It's basically just kind of a narrative love story, if you will, to the Big East from start to present, really, just kind of how it got started and all the crazy backstories of all the personalities and the crazy games and the amazing players that were in it. So I joke around with everybody that everyone has been miserable these past few months. I've been living in the 80s. It's been really nice.
That 30 for 30, man, that was a walk, right? Down memory lane. I loved it. I was living in Lexington, Kentucky in 1986. I was in high school, and I skipped school to go to the Final Four practice, which was basically the Big East.
Wow.
Georgetown, yeah, St. Yep. John's, and Villanova. And Memphis, yep, State.
That's right. That's right. They upset the apple cart. Yeah, that was the height of it. But, man, there's just, I don't know, you kind of go through all of it and you can't believe it actually happened, because the players were larger than life. The coaches were larger than life. They had fist fights. I mean, it was bananas.
It certainly was. Well, we look forward to that. Good luck with that book. And so let's start with yesterday's news. There's been a lot of layers of news this week, the college basketball world. The big shocker, right as, I don't know about shocker, I guess we kind of had a hint this was coming, but it did go down when we were on back basically this time yesterday when we were on the air. Greg Marshall out at Wichita State. Like I said, this had been brewing, but man, the things you hear, not good for Greg Marshall going all the way back to Winthrop.
Yeah, it's, you know, like you said, this has been ongoing for some time. My colleague CJ Moore and I wrote a story a month ago about the fact that the Wichita State was investigating accusations of abuse, player abuse, verbal and physical, involving Greg Marshall. And they started that investigation August 25th, I want to say. And then, you know, we also discovered that, like you said, guys at Winthrop who played for him at the beginning of his career went through similar circumstances. And, you know, I think basically, since the investigation completed, it's been just sort of a tap dance between lawyers trying to work out the separation agreement, which they finally got done yesterday. So Greg Marshall's out, but he's out with a lovely $7.75 million cushion, if
yep.
you will.
Yep, something I've always looked for in this business, but I'll never get.
I'll take four.
Hey, look, right, we can negotiate, but I'll take seven figures to go away any day and with a big smile on my face. I said this yesterday, and tell me if you agree or disagree. This stuff, look, has been going on forever. Going back to when we were just talking about the 80s, all that stuff that we loved. We know plenty of coaches. This has been going on for decades and decades and decades and decades. And players tried to come forward, but nobody would listen. Or they didn't because they knew nobody would listen or they were afraid to. I think the difference today, the reason these coaches cannot get away with this behavior anymore is just simply put, in this landscape, in 2020, as we're about to wrap up and it can go set sail and never be seen again, that, you know, student-athletes do have power now, and so they're willing to come forward and talk, and they're not afraid anymore. Do you believe that to be true?
I think it's a combination. I think coaches have always been hard on players and scream at them and yell and curse and all that. I do think most tend to walk the very fine line between that and being downright abusive. I don't think back in the day, having just reported all this, but, you know, John Thompson wasn't laying hands on anybody or punching anybody or doing anything like that. You know, and he was tough and he was difficult. And he called them, you know, he called their attention to detail, if you will. But he also, you know, I think they felt like he could be trusted, that he wasn't out to injure them, hurt them, to belittle them as much as motivate them. I think he understood the line. I think Greg Marshall crossed it. But certainly to your point, yeah, I mean, you know, what's interesting about this story is I think a lot of people are like, well, why did they put up with it? Why did they put up with it? Well, they were scared. I mean, at the end of the day, the coach holds the key to your scholarship. And if you complain and nobody believes you, then you're done. And that's why I think what's happening now is administrations are starting to believe these players when they come forward. And the players understand that we don't have to put up with this stuff, that, you know, that there is some backing in what we say and some, you know, some validity to it, and that people will believe us. So, you know, I think the false faith that everybody does it is there's degrees of it, and I think some people know they know the difference, and those who don't are finally getting called out on it.
Dana, if we were building a roller coaster right now at an amusement park and we called it college basketball this season, how bumpy of a ride is this going to be this year?
Yeah, I've said it multiple times. I said, to me, this season is like when people put out their seasons, it's like giving Santa Claus a wish list. I have 25 things on it. I'd like to get 10. If you'd be okay with giving me 10 games, I'll take them, or 13, as it were, to get me eligible for the NCAA tournament. It's going to be like this. I mean, I was on a conference call with Dan Gavitt, the NCAA vice president, this week, and that's what he said. You know, if we start now, if we start January, if we start in February, it's going to be like this. We're going to have cancellations, and it's going to even feel worse than college football because of numbers. There's 357 teams in college basketball, and there's less players in closer contact. So this is the way it's going to be. Teams are going to get shut down. We're going to have stops and starts. But the goal for everyone is to try to get 13 games into your NCAA tournament eligible so they can host this tournament. That's what they have to have happen. They have to have an NCAA tournament. So you just have to buckle up until we get there.
Talking to Dana O'Neill from The Athletic, great college basketball coverage there. And Dana, I got one more on Greg Marshall, and then I want to get further into what's going on a daily basis with practice and things like that. But I thought about this morning. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and we were thinking back to his record at Winthrop. He was at Winthrop for a long time and won a bunch. And there were a couple of times, or I think it was Tennessee specifically, but there were tons of Power 5 jobs where his name always seemed to get in the mix, and then year after year he stayed at Winthrop. I'm just really curious, behind the scenes, like you just pointed out, there's plenty of coaches that are a little wacky, that are very demanding, but at the end of the day, their players love them, they're great characters, and they have that balance between crazy, demanding, yelling, but tough love. I'm just wondering how much this reputation has been there for Greg Marshall all these years, and we just never really paid that much attention until the players came forward.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, he's also been at Wichita State for a really long time and not move up to a Power 5 job, right? With a lot of opportunity. He took that team on an undefeated run in the Final Four. I mean, that usually merits movement if you want it. So, yeah, I think, you know, I definitely think that there were signs. I mean, look, if you've ever gone to a game and watched him coach, he's maniacal on the sidelines. That there was an incident not too long ago of him getting thrown out of an exhibition game in Canada because he darn near lost his mind on an official, and his players had back from getting into a fist fight. So it's not like it's like, oh, my goodness. And I think if you talk to people in the coaching fraternity who don't ever want to out each other, but if you talk to them privately, none of them are surprised. None of them are like, oh, my goodness, this is how Greg Marshall behaved. Everyone sort of knew. Did that stop him from getting jobs? I don't know. But, you know, sometimes your reputation does precede you, even if it's not talked about publicly. So you have to wonder, I think, in retrospect, if people, you know, tolerated it, knew it, put up with it, but that's why he didn't move anyplace else. I think it's a fair question to ask.
Yeah, that's what makes me sad. I put myself in the shoes of some of these players who, you know, they're playing for a team that's winning big. And so it's very, very easy for people who should be watching and probably are aware on some level that, hey, this guy is right up against the line. This is pretty tough stuff, but they justify it because they're winning. It just puts the player in a really tough spot to be able to have the courage to come forward and take the chance of, you know, having this happen. So I commend all those players for being honest and backing each other up.
I agree. I mean, 100%. Because, yeah, it's one thing it's difficult enough under the worst of circumstances to go forward and say my coach is treating me horribly. But, hey, we just went to the Final Four, and this guy's a jerk. Yeah, hi. Good luck with that. Wichita State, and we went to the Final Four, and I have a complaint about the coach. I mean, it's disgusting to say that out loud, and I hate to sound so cynical, but that is the truth of the matter.
So, Dana, I looked at your article, and I think there are probably a lot of sports fans right now that are just really glad to be having games, and, you know, they're told the college basketball season is starting here, and they haven't paid that much attention. But, you know, it really jumped out at me. There are over 30 teams right now that can't practice because of the issues. So the numbers of basketball are going to make this really challenging because it doesn't take very many with the contact tracing to shut a team down.
No, absolutely. And it's really complicated because, of course, every league is different. I've been working on trying to collect league information from all 32 conferences. Like, what are your standards? I've gotten some, and the problem is there are no standards. Like, what works for one league doesn't work for the other. And so your sit-out rules are different, and what you have to do if one person tests positive, if it's a coach or if it's a player or if it's a manager. It's going to be really messy, and we're seeing this, you know, a lot of people are saying right now we're seeing this because there are still regular students on campus, and when the students clear out, it'll get better because, you know, there'll be less people and they'll be able to contain things more, except that's when the games start. And so then these teams start traveling from place to place and playing against other schools with other protocols. So, like I said, it's going to be messy, and it's not going to be fair. I mean, I've said, if whatever coach stands up on Selection Sunday and says, I deserved a bid and I didn't get one, I mean, we all should just take our shoes and throw it at him, because this is not – there is going to be no fair on Selection Sunday. It's going to be good luck to the committee trying to figure this out, because games are going to get canceled. But, you know, hey, we tried to play really good teams and we got COVID. Oh, well, sorry, you couldn't. Does that count? I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a mess.
I know just a couple of days ago they announced the tournament is going to be all in the Indianapolis area. And right around the same time is when Rick Pitino said, hey, we need to push this back a couple of months. It was he doesn't quite have the pull that he had before, but is there any flexibility in the dates? If things just really are hard to get things in, can they push the dates of the tournament back at all?
I think everything is on the table. You know, when Dan Gavitt had that call earlier this week, he basically said that, you know, everything is on the table. You know, they are hoping to play a 68-team tournament. Could they play 64? Could they play 32 if they had to? Yeah. They're hoping to start, you know, right when it's supposed to start, mid-March. If they have to push it back a week because of whatever complications, would they? Yeah, they would. I think, you know, the idea of a May Madness, I think the idea is you start in January, but that's like pretending like some magic wand is going to change everything in January. It's not. I mean, I know Pfizer had great news and Moderna's had great news, but we're not going to all be vaccinated by January the 1st. This isn't going to just disappear. So that's sort of the NCAA's argument, is like, we can keep moving the goalposts, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee us anything. So their solution, and I think it's a wise one, is at least to say, when we can control what we can control, which is the NCAA tournament, we're bringing everybody to Indianapolis, and we're not going to have a bubble, because it's not a bubble. This isn't a Disney resort with NBA money, but this is going to be very controlled environments, and try to pull this tournament off. I mean, people need it financially, and people want it. I mean, you're right. People want to watch college basketball and sports. They miss having that tournament last year. These kids all went through hell having it pulled out from underneath of them. So they want to do the right thing, and they're trying to do everything they can to protect it and make it happen.
We're talking to Dana O'Neill of The Athletic. She's a senior college basketball writer for them about the potential of the NCAA tournament. So I'm curious of your thoughts here. We've seen football and how it just, you have the conferences kind of doing their thing. The Big Ten canceled the season and then they changed their mind. And it just didn't feel like that they were working together as much in football. Do you feel like that process has been a little bit better through basketball and trying to get to at least this point?
Yes and no. I mean, like I said, I think the one challenge is just all the protocols are not like uniform for the 32 conferences. But I do believe that that basketball's advantage long has been Dan Gavitt. I mean, there's an NCAA vice president who's in charge of basketball, and he's as close to a czar as you can possibly get for the sport. And everyone likes him and everyone trusts him. I mean, they know he's a good man with a good head on his shoulders. And I think there's been a lot of conversations that he's in on, like he's in on the NABC calls and he's on the calls with all the doctors and he's on the calls with these, you know, these kind of power coaches who have gotten together and sort of, I don't know what they call themselves, but they get together biweekly and chat about the state of the game. And he's in on all of that. So I think he has more of a collective understanding and, a goal to pull this off. And I do think there's a collegiality I've always believed in college basketball among coaches more than there is in football. I don't know why, it's personality or what it is, but I think there's a recognition of trying to do the greater good here and have a basketball season. And it's not going to be like, I'm going to have my basketball season and step on your head to get there. It's like we all have to get to this massive great thing that we call March Madness, so let's figure out how to work to get there together.
I know in your article you quoted that they were going to share – you know, around $600 million. They lost $700 million because of the cancellation of the 2020 tournament and ended up sharing about $225 million. Do we truly know what the long-term ramifications of that will be yet, even if they do play this year's tournament?
I think it's, no, we don't, and I think it's going to be ongoing. I mean, look, even if they play the tournament this year, odds are they aren't going to have fans. I mean, or at least certainly not like the kind of fans that we're used to, so the ticket revenue is not going to be what the ticket revenue was, no, I mean, I think the numbers will be staggering because look, while it hurts all schools, you know, every school is suffering without their NCAA shares and without the NCAA money. Let's face it, there are some schools in college basketball that are really going to suffer because the beauty of college basketball is it's every man status that, you know, Loyola of Chicago and Wichita State can make the Final Four and Butler and VCU, not just, you know, Alabama and Clemson every year. So those schools that don't have football, that don't have that, you know, that safety net, are really going to get hurt by what they didn't make last year. They're not going to have fans in attendance this year, odds are. So, yeah, we're going to see, you know, we're going to see some difficult times here if we can't get through this. But, you know, the NCAA tournament is not the salve. It's not going to save college basketball, but it's sure going to help if they can get that CBS money.
So your gut feeling is, do they play it or do they not?
Mm-hmm. I think they play it. I really do. I think, look, I mean, I say this not knowing, of course, what's going to happen with the virus. I mean, we have no clue where we are headed in terms of the virus and statewide shutdowns and rules that are well beyond college athletics. Like, you know, we have, believe it or not, the NCAA and college athletics don't rule the world, but presuming that there is a way that they can play it, they will play it. Like 13 games is the threshold, and from November 25th to like March 16th, you should hopefully be able to get 13 games in and make it. And they even, and if you can't, there is a waiver process. If teams can't make it to 13 games because of shutdown, they can ask for a waiver to be considered for the tournament. So I think if the hope, if everything allows the tournament to be played and the season to be played, you know, in the grand scheme of things, there will be one. I think, you know, the one thing we have no idea about is what's going to happen in the next few weeks with the virus itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers are crossed for sure. Dana O'Neill of The Athletic, sure. Senior writer for them. Hey, we appreciate the time today.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Really good stuff there. And you can check her article out at theathletic.com. Very cool service that that they have a lot of good stuff there. Darren, I know that you have a word before we come back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase.
Another cool service, DraftKings Sportsbook. Yeah, week 10's in the books. It's done. On to week 11. It's time to get ready and get geared up for another week of a lot of action. Yeah, there's no better place to get in and on all that action when DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. All you have to do to add to the excitement of week 11 is listen up. DraftKings Sportsbook is going to bring back their can't-miss offer. If you haven't tried DraftKings Sportsbook yet, you've heard me talking about them, but you haven't tried it yet, well, this may nudge you in the right direction. Head to the App Store right now. It's free and easy to do. Download the app. Because you don't want to miss this. DraftKings Sportsbook is giving all new users a chance to earn a sign-up bonus up to $1,000 when you sign up and use the promo code 1025GAME. DraftKings Sportsbook has endless ways for you to bet, from live betting, betting on your favorite players. They do it all. Don't worry. If football isn't your thing, DraftKings is giving all MMA fans who sign up now the chance to triple their winnings for any bet placed on UFC 255. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Once again, all you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME when you sign up and get up to $1,000. You're hearing me correctly. That code again, 1025GAME. Get the deposit bonus up to $1,000 for a limited time only DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789. Don't forget, your favorite game is tomorrow. Silly Underdog Picks. We'll review. We'll make our new picks at high noon tomorrow. You can play along as well. You get your three picks, college or pro, this year, which has been a lot of fun. And that'll start tomorrow, where you can get in there and make your selections. Our weekly winner, receive a Party Foul gift card. All you have to do is go to thegamenashville.com or ESPN The Game Nashville mobile app and sign up and make your picks today. I know Chris Sanders, who joined us yesterday, was chomping at the bit. This is now 2 weeks in a row. He's excited for Thursday at noon. Been a while since he's been excited, but he is excited.
And he's hit a couple of big point games.
Yes, he has. He has moved ahead of someone.
Yeah, he has.
In the standings. All right. Just saying. We just talked a little college hoops with Dane O'Neill, which was really good. The NBA draft is tonight. Either one of you care about the NBA draft? Will you watch?
Well,
you just get the
based
results.
On the other options, I probably will keep an eye
Maction.
On it.
Got Maction tonight.
Well, Maction. Like I said, given the options, I think I will follow.
You watch your mouth. You be very careful about talking about the Mac.
I got nothing against the Mac. I love the Mac, but I probably am not that desperate to watch a football game. There's a lot of football games coming up this weekend that I'm looking forward to. But
let's hope so.
You're just not invested like we are, but that's fine.
But I'm you know, obviously with a couple of Vanderbilt guys, I'm really curious to see where they go. In Saban Lee's case, if he's drafted. And, you know, James Wiseman has Nashville ties. He lived here for a while. Yep. He could be he's going to be one of the top two or three picks for sure.
He was so much fun to watch at Memphis this year. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, we know what happened there.
A couple games was
pretty
cool.
If you did get a glimpse of him somewhere along the line, whether he was a kid growing up here or in the brief time he was eligible, was it like two games?
Very brief.
Three games.
Was it
three games?
Okay, yeah. I would have said under.
But I will tell you, I saw one of the games. He is eye popping. He jumps off the page at how good he is. He is going to be a heck of a player. So yeah, I'm going to watch some. I can't tell you that I'm going to sit there and watch hours of it, but I'm going to keep track of it.
A heck of a player on the Warriors,
possibly.
Oh my.
And also, you know, Aaron Nesmith is going to be a first-round pick, and it's bittersweet for all the Vanderbilt fans to think that you have Darius Garland and you have Aaron Nesmith, two not only first-round picks but pretty high first-round picks.
Yeah, I mean, Nesmith could be a lottery pick, right?
And if you close your eyes, you missed him?
No, yeah. Well, you did get to see Nesmith. He was the one bright spot in the 0-18 which is really an 0-19 when you include the SEC tournament. But he was the one guy that impressed me every night. And
no
Saban
doubt.
Lee, too. Saban Lee, those guys played hard. That is one thing you have to say about those guys, is they had some rough stuff go on around them. And they kept playing hard. And they kept getting better. And it's a shame that Neesmith got hurt, because I do think if he'd have stayed healthy last year, they would have been much scrappier. You know, the last game he played was at Auburn, where they had every they had a chance to win that game. And then the next thing you know, Neesmith is done for the season. And, you know, as we know, it's a struggle again. But I admire the heck out of those guys and what they did. And, you know, 20 years from now, they'll look back. People, you'll look back and you'll say, those guys were at Vanderbilt, and that's how many games they won.
Yep.
But class guys who played their tails off while they were in there. And that's admirable, because it's easy to shut it down. And some people did, right? That's what got Bryce Drew fired, right? Some of the guys, they couldn't keep the nose to the grindstone and keep fighting. But not those two guys. So I hope things turn out well for those two.
Can I just say this? And look, I'm certainly not an NBA scout. Sometimes I do try to play one on the radio. I wouldn't take Anthony Edwards number one. I kept watching him, and I wanted to be impressed. And I'm just going to be honest. I was not really ever impressed. I don't know. I just think if he goes number one overall, dare I say it, I'm not sure that one's going to work out. I think it could be another Anthony that went number one overall not too long ago to the Cavs, Anthony Bennett from UNLV.
Yeah, I'm there with you.
I'm just not sold on him. I'm going to need to see it to believe it, but I'm just telling you right now, I'm not sold that Anthony Edwards is ever going to turn out to be a star in the NBA.
There really isn't a consensus, you know, a consensus at number one right now, is there?
One who's kind of moved. I was looking at DraftKings and their odds, and he's the favorite. LaMelo Ball is two. Wiseman is three. Although, I did see this on DraftKings. There was a guy that put $7,000 on LaMelo Ball over 2.5 spots. The payout is $18,000. But he took the over 2.5. So obviously he believes that he will not be one of the first two selections.
And LaMelo Ball, of course, is there's such a backstory there going back years and years when you first started hearing about the Ball family. And, of course, he bolted, and we've never really seen him play unless you watch the videos from the European games
he's played in the French league or Australian.
And of course, you get the whole Ball family if you draft him. So have fun with that.
You're drafting LeVar as well.
Luckily, LeVar has been muted.
Well, if you remember, I was when it was 3D and Chase was a part of the 3D. I was the one screaming.
You wanted him on every day on the show. And I was like, no, Willie, we're not going to have LeVar on. No. You're like, come on.
But remember, the whole thing was,
he'll talk to anybody.
I kept saying, if you stop giving him a mic, if somebody stops interviewing him, he will go away. But people kept wanting to interview him. Like, why do people want to interview him?
Well, then they found out he was a clown, and then they're like, okay, this
is
stupid.
It took a while, though. Like, he kept getting the mic.
It did, no doubt. Well, because he, at the time, he was, you know, he got ratings. People would actually listen to him, and then they realized he was a clown, and it's like, okay. How's that shoe doing, by the way?
Good question.
The one that costs, what, $500?
How's it doing? Haven't heard much. You know, anybody know anybody that's got that shoe?
Nope.
Anybody? Anyone?
Can't say that I do.
That was an easy prediction.
Is it? Let's see. I want to see if it's still out there. Is it still available to be?
My bet would be.
Are those shoes still being made?
What are they called? Craigslist, maybe. Okay. I don't think they
marketplace.
Yeah.
Marketplace.
Yard sales across the country.
You can go to bigballerbrandinc.com and they have them there for
how long does it take to get them delivered? Because they'll have to make it.
when you order one, they'll have to make it. So it's going to, because you know they don't have any laying around.
And honestly, with LaMelo, if he turns out to be good, does that regenerate this whole thing with the shoe?
Oh, you know it does, because Lonzo is meh.
Yeah, he's a solid pro, he's gonna make a lot of money before it's all over as an NBA player. He's just not worth the hype that he
got. He's not going to be great.
He's New Orleans
gonna
now.
He's not going to be a superstar. Yeah,
right. But you know how much money that is.
He was a part of the Anthony.
That's right. Yeah,
the Anthony deal.
Exactly. But when you add up all the money he's going to make between now and the time he retires, that's going to be a huge amount of money.
Well, yeah, but the league is littered with those guys that walk away.
Question.
And you're like, he made $90 million. Yep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, one of my favorite guys is the kid that played at Tennessee. He plays for the Sixers. I've always thought he's a very good player.
Tobias Harris.
Yeah.
Has made a fortune.
Yes, and he's still going strong.
A fortune.
And he is the quintessential good, solid NBA player. But the amount of money he makes is more than the highest paid NFL players.
Look at Robert Covington.
Oh, that's another good one.
Another guy.
Which, by the way, did he just get traded to the Blazers?
He sure did for a couple first-round picks.
Yeah, he got traded to the Blazers from the Rockets, and goodbye him because I just saw where he was back in town, and I think he donated some money to Penny Collins and the basketball program for a new facility. I think I saw that. So they're going to be building getting some new stuff over at TSU, courtesy of Robert Covington.
I just got a text saying, "Don't hate on Lonzo."
One thing about LaMelo though is, because you're talking about the big baller brand, his shoe deal. He actually signed with Puma for $100 million, $100 million deal with Puma.
So the family is out in the cold on that one.
Good for him.
Well, is LaMelo supposed to be the better of the three?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I think that's what's always been said. I mean, once again, I'll believe it. Remember who was saying that? I mean, that was Dad. So I don't.
Well, I feel like I've read that in other places, too.
Yeah. That's always been out there, that he was the best of the brothers. But I don't know. I'll need to see it to believe it.
Because what's the youngest name? LiAngelo? Is that right?
LiAngelo's the middle one.
He's the middle.
Middle one.
Yeah, this is the youngest.
Oh, so he's the youngest. Okay.
Yeah, this is the youngest.
Gotcha. Sorry, I'm not, you know,
come
don't
on.
Keep up with the
know
ball
your
family.
Balls, Chase.
That didn't come out right.
Or did it? Who knows? I
mean. What? Why?
Well, I guess that was... Okay, all right.
I know them well. But anyway.
So that's a no. Nobody's really... I know Elijah will watch, so nobody's really going to pay attention.
No, I just said I'm
not going to watch, but I'll keep, you know, I'll probably keep up with it on Twitter and my phone, and if I happen to be scrolling through and it's on, then I'll check it out. But I don't get into drafts except for really the NFL or NHL if I'm working, but I don't sit there and watch draft shows for hours and hours. It's just never really been my thing.
The Titans have activated running back Sonoris Perry from IR.
Yep.
He joined the active roster.
I actually think that could be a good move for special teams because he's been a pretty good special teamer in his day. So I think that may be good for special teams for coverage.
Can't hurt. This is going to be a very, very interesting spot. Because one of these two teams is going to fall to 6-4. And, oh, by the way, the Colts and the Packers are going to play. What happens in that game? If the Colts win and the Titans lose, boy, does that set up an interesting matchup the following week. If the Colts lose and the Titans win, wow. Well, I mean, this is going to determine their season. Do you even throw in the Browns game, too, the next 3 weeks? Or do you say this game and next week could determine their season?
I think you have to throw the Browns game in there.
I think so, too. I really do.
Well, I was looking at it. As you got, we had different ways of coming up with our power rankings. And part of what I did was I looked at the remaining schedule. I think this is a critical time in terms of winning the division. I do think that the schedule does lighten up a little bit, especially after that Browns game. You know, the only game that is really scary is the game at Lambeau right after Christmas. But I think the Titans have, if you ask me, I think they've got four games that they ought to win. Now, we know in this league, that doesn't mean you're going to get them. But I can absolutely see them, even if they lose to the Ravens and the Colts, I can still see them going to 10-6.
Well, 10-6 gets you in the playoffs this year.
Yes.
Hmm.
With seven spots?
There's such a logjam, though.
All the teams we talked about yesterday, I mean, how many of those teams could get to 10 wins?
You just said it. Everybody starts playing each other.
You have six teams. True. Six teams in the AFC right now at 6-3.
Right, that won't be the case.
Now, there's head-to-head match. Obviously, it's going to change. But, I mean, there's such a logjam that, you know, the Titans and Colts game next week is going to be for the division, most likely. That's going to be for the AFC South. This is a very important game when it comes to, you know, AFC seeding for both Baltimore and the Titans. So, I think the next three games are critical.
If you go obviously they are, but if you go 10-6 and you don't get in with an expanded field, that would be mathematically something we haven't seen.
No, wait a minute. But we've also never seen this many 6-win teams in the same conference ever since the conferences were created. So you've also got a dynamic in play that we've never seen before. There's never been this many 6-win teams at this point in a season ever since they created the AFC and the NFC.
Right. It usually works itself out. Now, the one thing that is maybe different than anything we've ever seen before is that the NFC East is so bad. I don't think there's ever been a division that's that bad. And I don't think it's going to get any better.
But that doesn't help the Titans or the AFC. That's the point. The AFC is tougher than the NFC.
Hear me out on this, though. The division, and I got to double-check this, but what division is it in the AFC that gets to play all the teams in the NFC East? Because that's a big part of it. That division has an advantage, at least in the non-conference games, right? We know that doesn't help you in tiebreakers. But the fact that that division gets to play all of the teams in the NFC East?
Well, I think
what a coup.
It's the North, isn't it?
So the Ravens, that's why I was looking at the Ravens yesterday. They still get to play from now to the end of the year. They get to play the Cowboys and the Giants at home.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you for those.
Yep. But
they've already beaten the football team. And they've beaten the Eagles.
Though, Willie, to your point, if they go 10-6, I mean, where you got seven games left, where are those wins and where are those losses? I mean, if they lose the next three, but then they win out.
Well, they can't win. They're not going to win. They can't lose the next three. That's not a good recipe.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But you were saying 10-6 probably gets you in. If they lose the next three and then win the remaining four, that puts them at 10-6.
But you lost three. You lost
I don't,
four.
I still don't know if they
but
get
you're throwing all kinds. There's a lot of different ways you could end up at 10-6. I'm just saying it's very reasonable, even if you lose the next two, to still end up at 10-6.
Right, but you're saying
the Browns are another team that benefit because you're asking yourself the Browns, who they can look pretty good when they're at their best, but they can be shaky, right? They have definitely taken advantage of the fact that they're playing the NFC East. They're 2-0 against that division already, and they still get to play the Eagles and the Giants. So that's going to help them. So along the lines of
– And the Jags.
They get the Jags too.
And the Jets.
Wow.
See what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah. See what I mean?
I didn't realize they
play
the Jets. Woo.
Yeah, they play the Jets, the Jags, and two teams in the NFC East.
That's a nice little recipe for them.
So you tell me the Browns can't get to 10 wins?
Oh, they can get to 10 wins. That's a great point. Maybe I should rethink.
You can't – if you think – I know normal times 10-6 could and should – but we've also seen 10-6 not. We just talked about it, what was it, yesterday, the other day, on Chip Kelly's first year. Was it his first year, second year? First year, he got him in the playoffs at 10-6. The next year, they came back and they were 10-6, and they didn't get in the playoffs. So 10-6 is not a precedent that says, hey, you get to 10 double-digit wins, you're getting in. I mean, don't forget the 1 year Tom Brady went down, the Patriots went 11-5 with Castle, and they didn't get in.
I also suspect that the Browns may not be good enough to win all those games. They might slip up against one of those teams. This is my hunch. I don't know that they're that solid of a team. But
What did they do on Sunday? This is what they can do against those crappy teams. What did they do against the Texans?
Barely won.
Barely won.
10-7?
Yeah, but they also, Nick Chubb went out at the 1 yard line, by the way. It didn't score, and so they could just take a knee.
That was brutal.
It was brutal. The line was, by the way, the line was 3.5.
The line was affected by that, no question.
3.5, and Chubb went out of bounds at the 1. But what did they do to the Texans? They crammed it down their throat. Chubb and Hunt both went over 100 yards. They ran for like 240 yards rushing. You tell me they can't do that against the Jets and the Jags and the Giants and the Eagles?
They're going to do it to some of them. I just don't know that they're going to 4-0.
You're not relying on Baker Mayfield. You're not. He doesn't have to sling it around 40 times for them to win. And, oh, by the way, their defense is good.
We'll see.
It's going to be very interesting.
I still like my chances at 10-6.
Right, but you didn't say like your chances. You said 10-6 and you're good.
Yes.
And I said, no, wait a minute. That's not true.
Depends on where what's a win and what's a loss.
I will take my chances. I think you're in.
Put money on it? You want to bet on it?
At 10-6?
You're guaranteed every 10-6 team is getting in the playoffs? You guaranteeing that for us? You want to bet?
I will take the probability. I know it's not 100%, but I think it's I would take that bet.
That's not what you said. You said you're getting in. So do you want to bet? You want to bet something?
Sure.
I'm telling you, a 10-6 team will not get in.
You're betting that a 10-6 team will not get in?
Yep.
I'll take that bet.
Okay. We'll figure out what we need to bet on. Yeah. All right, we'll come back. Bernard Pollard to start the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.